14, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM on the web. Well, today, lots going on. It's Friday, it's the end of the week. In other nations, this is usually a good day for huge demonstrations, and we haven't seen many of those in recent months in Portland, nonetheless. Before we get to the headlines, just a heads up for listeners. We are very fortunate this morning to be, we'll be speaking with Michael Copps. He is with Common Cause. We're going to be continuing our discussion of net neutrality, the demise of which, and the impact that is going to have on what we laughingly call American-style democracy. First, though, a few headlines. Jason Conger is a Republican of Bend, and he is, of course, calling for the state to shut down, cover Oregon, and offer subsidies for consumers outside the exchange. But Director Bruce Goldberg said that many of the errors that have kept the website down were eliminated in the past week. I guess better late than never. And advocates cited a statistic that Americans are about 270 times. That's 270 times more likely to die in a workplace accident than in an act of terrorism. Closer communications between government agencies could have prevented the chemical spill from West Virginia from infecting the water supply. Complying with a 1986 federal law, Freedom Industries filed a form in February of 2013 letting local and state officials know that the company was storing a potentially harmful chemical. But regulators did not use the information to develop a response plan in the event of, wait for it, in the event of a chemical spill. And a former CIA officer and torture whistleblower, John Kiriakou. Yes, John Kiriakou. He's been on Cascadia. He's been in prison for being a courageous whistleblower. He had to deal with the Bureau of Prisons recently, and the deal was that he would stop writing letters from Loreto, decline press, and drop his complaints in exchange for 9 months in a halfway house. Funny how the rules change when there are no rules. Now they're talking about revoking the deal that they had promised him. And closer to home, back in Cascadia, Kelsey Juliana, 17 years old, and Olivia Chernak, 13, are standing up to Kitzhaber's vision of what Oregon Cascadia's likely environmental future is going to look like, what with global warming, with climate change, with the catastrophes downstream waiting us. Their appeal now is the latest step in a legal battle aimed at forcing state governments across the country, this is a national campaign, across the country to tackle head-on the issue of global warming and to speed up efforts to reduce carbon emissions. If higher courts ultimately rule that judges can order states to take such actions, it's likely would be considered a landmark decision and would reverberate across the nation. That's right, two girls under the age of 18 who have taken it upon themselves to address climate collapse head on. And the left is accused of never coming up with any good news. Well, I beg to differ, because here we are making hay with the announcement that Senator Tom Coburn, yes, that's right, Tom Coburn, the Tom filibuster this Coburn, will resign at the end of the current session of Congress. And that's nearly 2 years before his term is scheduled to end. And four states, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas, would again have to get approval from the Justice Department before making any changes in the way that they hold elections. Under a bipartisan bill introduced yesterday to restore parts of the Voting Rights Act that the Supreme Court struck down as unconstitutional. What kind of a strange parallel universe are we all living in when we have the Voting Rights Act itself, which has for decades been, of course, something embraced on a nonpartisan basis by Republicans, Democrats, everyone in general. It's, for God's sakes, it's the Voting Rights Act, people. This John Roberts Supreme Court struck down parts of the Voting Rights Act as unconstitutional. And now, finally, These four states are going to have to get the approval of the Justice Department before they monkey around with the Voting Rights Act anymore. And Ecuador guarantees the constitutional right, people, to health and education for all citizens. That plus asylum for Julian Assange. What a country. What a world. Weather clear, cold, sucked in the morning, lows overnight in the 30s and highs and during the daytime, reaching to the upper 40s. It's pretty much a pattern that persists over the weekend, as does the usually around full moon. The alternative forecast holds steady for the days when the moon is at its largest. So we're going to cut to the chase here because we're very, very fortunate this morning to have a special guest from Common Cause to talk a little bit more about net neutrality and its effect on democracy. We'll be speaking with Todd O'Boyle. Excuse me, I had Michael Copps on my one sheet, and we're going to change that, speak with Todd O'Boyle instead. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. We're delighted to have you. And yesterday we spoke with Nicholas Johnson, former commissioner with the FCC and now teaching law at the University of Iowa College of Law. We're glad to have you come on the show to continue this. It's extremely important. I don't think that people, the average consumer of the 24-hour news cycle these days, has any notion of how important this is and the role that net neutrality plays in maintaining a healthy democracy rather than a two-tiered society. So can you expand a little bit on that and let listeners know what some of these implications are?
Sure. Well, the court decision was troubling. It cleared the way for major ISPs like Verizon and Time Warner Cable to start instituting pricing tiers, speeding up some parts of the internet, slowing down other parts of the internet. This is really troubling because, one, it brings upon us the very real possibility that your internet service is now going to start looking a lot more like cable TV. So, you know, your listeners may be interested in going to find something like KBOO's webpage online, and they may find that they can't get to it. But the website for the local Clear Channel station is coming through fine and speedy and responsive. This has some serious implications for our ability to access alternative media, independent media, dissent. It has implications for our ability to connect and organize on social media. Most of all, we're concerned that this is going to disproportionately affect the folks that can least afford it. So when we start introducing pay tiers and putting news and information, a luxury good online that only the ones that can afford the special news package for their internet service, say pay a monthly fee plus have to pay on top of that for a news package, that's very concerning.
And how does this distort content? What effect does it actually have on content? I would expect that we live in an environment of self censorship as it is. So what effect would it have on content?
Well, I think one thing we're going to see is that a company like Verizon is going to say, you know, we're interested in introducing a competitor to Netflix. So suddenly Netflix is going to slow down, and our service is going to be nice and responsive. We really have to worry about some of the anti-competitive impacts here. But in terms of other forms of content, the court made clear that the internet service providers can now block content really for whatever reason they see fit. And so it's seriously troubling in terms of free expression and free speech online. So Senator Al Franken once called net neutrality, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he called it the free speech issue of the 21st century, and I don't think he could be more right.
Yeah, it would certainly would seem so. What's astonishing me is that there isn't more outcry about this. I think people do are still a bit confused about what net neutrality actually is and what the loss of it is going to mean. This seems to be also a part and parcel of the citizens, the Supreme Court under John Roberts. This is a woeful, shameful, disgraceful Citizens United decision, in that it's a further step towards monetizing every aspect of the American experience.
You're absolutely right. All these issues are connected, and we're talking about the most powerful multinational corporations having the run of the show, and whether they're having an undue influence in the policy making process, or whether they're introducing frivolous lawsuits to sue for what sue to win what they can't lobby for, or whether they're filling the airwaves with smears and distorting all electoral process. You know, our democracy is in a bad shape right now, and it is our belief that until we commit to serious public interest media and telecommunications reform, we're not going to climb out of this hole. And if I can plug our website, your listeners can go to commoncause.org/openinternet to add their name to our petition, telling the FCC to write strong rules and protect consumers and not get bowled over by the largest telecoms in the land. We'll be delivering those signatures to the FCC soon, so I hope your listeners will get online with us and help protect online freedom.
This is a good website, by the way, if one does have questions or is a bit confused about the issue. This is a good place to go to get some straight answers. One final question, as we begin to run out of time here. The two-tiered system that this is going to generate, so insofar as public information is concerned, it seems that this is going to drive the great divide between different groups of Americans even further, wider apart. Just a quick observation on that, if you could.
Absolutely. You know, the more we the more the corporate interests can exploit and dominate our media and telecommunications infrastructure, the more that they're going to push the process in a manner that gets them what they want, and the further it's going to push us away from the sort of real community sustaining democratic dialogue that our media should be fostering. And so it's great to see alternative and independent outlets like KBOO, but we need a lot more KBOOs. And the more we move towards the corporate consolidation, the corporate takeover and corporate consolidation of our media and telecommunications infrastructure, the farther we get from where we need to be.
Thank you so much for that. We've been speaking with Todd Boyle with Common Cause. We'll put links to that website on the KBOO website. Don't forget, this is a petition. It's critically important to get on it right now. This has been Air Cascadia for Friday, January 17th, 2014. Sam Parrish engineered the show today. Thanks so much for that, Sam. And Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
I need not pause to say how very delighted I am to see you turning out in such large numbers.
KBOO Radio is proud to sponsor Keep Alive the Dream 2014, the 29th annual tribute to the life and legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This annual event, a production of World Arts Foundation Incorporated, will be broadcast live from the Anthem Convention Center at 3300 Northeast 172nd Place in its entirety on KBOO on Monday, January 20th, from 11 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side under Community Events.
It's hard to think this great man is dead.
Tune in every Friday at 3 p.m. for Roots of Rock and Roll. Dale Farr and Steve Bricker play rare and vintage records from rhythm and blues, jump blues, rockabilly, and doo-wop, from the birth of rock and roll, the 50s and early 60s. Roots of Rock and Roll, only on KBOO Portland.
Flashpoints, a 35-year veteran of the National Security Agency speaks out about the Snowden revelations. We'll also speak with a former FBI special counsel about the NSA's subversion of democracy. And here in Berkeley, California, is the right wing trying to purge the left from the Berkeley City Council through redistricting. We're going to look at that. A local story. Oh, yeah. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints. Well, President Obama is scheduled to address the nation about NSA surveillance and possible changes. But press leaks on the speech indicate that the president will not announce any dramatic changes to the policy. And we want to talk about that today with two experts. And joining us to talk about it is J. Kirk Wiebe. He works as a senior analyst, former senior analyst, I should say, with Cygnet Automation Research Center. He also wrote the piece NSA Preference for Metadata. And he is having lunch not too far from Washington, D.C., with a colleague of his who also knows a great deal about that, and that's Bill Binney. Bill Binney,